6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
Got what? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See, the podcast, season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
This is In Defense of Ska. Our mission is to document the ska scene from its traditional roots through until its emergence as a diverse global genre. The influence of ska resonates through your favorite bands and artists in ways you might have missed. I'm your co-host Aaron Carnes, renowned author of the book In Defense of Ska, which is currently available in an expanded second edition. Joining me is your host Adam D. of Omnigon and Asian Man Records band Link 80.
We are speaking with The Chains from Copenhagen, Denmark. Their most recent album, Crying on the Dance Floor, was my most listened to album of 2024. They will be playing at the 2025 Supernova Ska Festival, their only scheduled U.S. performance. You know how I heard about this band, Aaron?
Let's see. Denmark, I'm going to guess it has something to do with Steve Borth, your old Link 80 bandmate.
Yep, Steve Borth turned me on to this band. I think we get a little bit into that during this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just leave it at that. But The Chains, they play a more traditional blend of ska, rocksteady, and boss reggae. But I think it sounds a little bit more current because of their production and their songwriting.
Mm-hmm. Yes. They're a great band. I really dig their stuff, and I'm glad we got to talk to them on this episode.
Yeah, and at the time of this recording, their most recent single, The Rent, is out, so go give it a listen. The Chains show no sign of slowing, so let's join them now to see where they are going.
Hi, I'm Pato. I sing and produce for The Chains.
Hi, I'm David. I play the bass and do the backing vocals and write the songs with Pato for the Chains.
Yes. Hi, I'm Lasse. I play guitar in the Chains and do a lot of the logistic stuff.
Okay, so Lasse, you and I go back a ways.
Yes.
You saw the Misfits of Ska tour at the Lopin.
Yeah, in Copenhagen.
Can you explain to the listeners what that was?
I guess it was 2000, I think, with Link 80 and Mutrion and 30 and Chingy's playing on something like a Tuesday at this amazing venue in Copenhagen called Lopin in Christiania. And I did a small fanzine at that time and had written in advance and got to do an interview with the Chinkies and I actually hung out with Mia and Mike and showed them around Christiania and we went on swings and everything. It was quite entertaining.
Yeah, can you explain Christiania a little bit?
Yeah, Christiania was in the 70s. It used to be old army area, like navy area. And in the beginning of the 70s, it was occupied by hippies who turned it into a free town, this whole experiment to live after those ideals. So it's was a not a legalized hash market, but kind of overlooked and became a very, at one point, I think it was the largest tourist attraction in Denmark, actually.
Definitely.
It has a very unique soul, or used to. Unfortunately, the last 10, 15 years, all the market stalls got taken over by gangs, and they finally closed it last year.
It's always been gangs.
But it got hardcore. They always had a no hard drug policy, which kind of ebbed out and started a lot of people started getting killed. It became something else than it used to be.
Yeah, we had a right-wing government for a while that started sending in police to take the hippies away, selling weed, basically. And then it made the market bigger for the
gangs. Yeah. Anyway, it's also a really nice place with really nice venues. but
Lopin is the best venue in Copenhagen.
It's a seesaw kind of situation, you know. So everybody that's been around like Danish music or at least the Copenhagen scene, even if you're like, if it's like, you know, little soft indie rock or it's like really hardcore metal, whatever, hip hop, dance hall, everything's been through Lopin in some way or form. It's just like a perfect, was like 450 capacity.
Fuji's played there. Yeah. So many big names have played there before they became big.
Yeah.
And you guys?
What's the translation of Lopin?
Flea, the flea.
Yeah,
it's good. It used to be like they like when the hippies moved in. It's actually like a old warehouse where they used to store cannons back in like the 1890s. So the whole floor is made to actually give way. You don't crash. It kind of like gives way. And I saw Flogging Molly play up there, and people were bouncing so hard that the actual like these like 200-year-old timbers just started swaying. It was really hardcore. It was so dope. But anyway, they started up as like a jazz club. And the things they and the furniture they pulled in there was full of fleas, so they called it the flea. So it's like a lot more.
And you have that first floor is music musiklum, the music flea, and the second floor is spiselum, the eating flea, because that's where the restaurant is.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, how did you get involved during the Misfits of Ska show? There was a moment where the music stopped.
There was a moment captured on a photograph. You broke a string, and the backstage area is downstairs, and you had to go get another string or get another guitar or something like that. And being 25 years ago, I can't remember all the details, but somehow the rest of the band ended up getting everybody to do a human pyramid. So there's this photo of me with Steve's Borth from Link 80 and RX Band. It's next to me at the bottom of a human pyramid. We had never met at that time, but there's a long story with me being the reason that he ended up over here later in life. So it's quite fun to have that picture of us way before we actually met.
So I'm almost positive that either Mike from the Chinkies or members of MET30 initiated that human pyramid. I think that's a move I've seen Mike pull before. Mike's a listener here to the show. So what was your impression of like hanging out with Mike and interviewing him?
Oh, what's the organ player's name? Do you remember? In Chingis?
And Steve Troy.
No, then it wasn't Steve. It was Mia. Mia was in the band, but did she play bass?
Mia played bass.
She played bass at that time.
It was Steve Choi on bass, Greg Alessandro on guitar.
Yeah, but you play bass, yeah. Hang on, they were so nice.
Yeah.
Really, and late, I started this ska festival called Copenhagen Ska Festival the year after, and I wrote a lot with Mia, and she, the Asian men were really supportive, sending sponsor records and stickers and everything to distribute and for prizes. And yeah, so really, really, really good experience. Really nice people and supportive of the scene, even though I was a 16-year-old kid at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steve Borth is like kind of the connection here between me knowing you guys. He lives in Copenhagen now. Tell us a little bit about your connection to Steve.
Well, I've been in a band with Steve, The Reflections, where we also did some old school ska stuff. So
nice.
Playing music together for a few years.
The whole thing started with I did a favor for a British booker where I booked our expanded Chris Murray. I didn't know either of the artists at the time in 2003 or 4. Did them a lot as well on the evening of the night that Bush got elected for the second time. And I had some of my friends play their second show. They did as a support for them, a band called Babylon Fandangos. And then Steve had this project called Satori. He wanted to do a Europe tour like 6 months later or something like that, and wanted to do it with European musicians because then you could save the money on the flights. And he was like, needed a drummer. So he reached out to the drummer from Babylon Fandangos and he did the tour. Miguel, the drummer, contacted me afterwards and said, hey, next time you do the Ska Festival, if you pay for Steve's flights, we'll back him as a tour and we'll put him on. So we did that, flew Steve over, and there was this cute girl in the audience called Heidi, and Steve and Heidi has been in Denmark ever since with kids and everything. So it's like this weird things of coincidences just happening.
I know Heidi from like way back, like when we're like 14, no, like 15, 16. Cause we're like her. We just kind of, everybody knew each other. We're all kind of like from, she's also from like the same island that Lubben is on outside of Copenhagen. It's not outside, but it's just like a part. It's like a little island outside. Anyway, it's called Amager. We just knew each other from there. Anyway, Steve, he came over here and he just hooked up with Heidi, and he was just running over. He was trying to get some hookups. And I had like a bunch of like my degenerate friends. We just like, we were partying so hard that we like, now we got to do something for our physical health. And we're like, let's go swimming. You know, let's go like Monday. We'll get up. We'll be like responsible people that don't have jobs, but still like wanting to do something like, so like, let's go to like the local swim bath. And like Steve was there, and he came by the studio, always like, hey man, come swimming with us. You know, we're just a bunch of dudes, you know. And he came like, it's always like on a Monday around like, you know, 10 in the morning, you know, and we hook up and like, you know, go for a few laps, you know, and just chill, and afterwards talk shit outside. It's Denmark, so it's always cold. You know, people be standing around like, you know, be raining, but you'd be over like a little shelter just talking shit. And Steve came by, and I was one of my friends who's like a Danish rapper slash weed entrepreneur, a guy called Raske Penge, which means healthy money. His name is Rasmus Raske. Yeah, anyway, he met Steve there, and through that Steve became part of his band, and they played, I think, probably the biggest stage in Denmark, playing Roskilde Festival Orange Stage, which is like standing capacity about 65,000.
This was the rappers band, the rap band.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. It's not rap. It's like reggae. But like Steve just kind of fit perfectly in there, and through that he just met like all the people that Raske was using as his band, and that became, you know, Guiding Star Orchestra and that whole. That Steve's got going on now. So,
and like, also before that, it was both ways, because I also did this massive big ska band, Horns of Babylon, with 18 horns, and Steve got in through that and met some of the people there through Guiding Star. So all three of us have actually played with Steve in different projects that wasn't related since he almost got here.
Yeah, Steve is kick ass, man. Yeah. Steve is the shit.
Nicest guy.
I by the way, also got introduced to him when he went playing with his Atari project at Dublin there. So that was my first in talking to him too.
I got him to play the saxophone on my solo shit. I did. I have a little rap career going on the side. I was booked to play the support slot for La Cosa Nostra, which is like the non Everlast part of House of Pain.
Mm.
And they were on European tour. It was like Slain, that guy, and Danny Boy O'Connor and DJ Lethal. And they played like a place called Gimle, which is out. This is Roskilde Festival, but Roskilde is a city. It's not that big, maybe like, what's like 50,000?
Yeah, something like
that. Like, it's okay. They have a few little venues. And so I need a saxophone player for my set supporting. Like, and I brought him in. So we were hanging backstage with Danny Boy from House of Pain. It was really weird.
I want to ask a quick question about that. The RX Bandit show that was the same night that Bush was elected a second term. Yeah, what was that set like?
They came to Denmark the day before because they had a day off.
Yeah.
And my old band were actually playing Amnesty International demonstration in front of the American Embassy. And I got them to put on Chris Murray and RX Bandit as well. But we played first, and then Chris, I think he maybe did two songs, but then the police shut everything down. So we went back to my place and hung out all night. And out there in the world, somewhere, there's a four-track recording tape of RX Bandit, my guys and me, and Chris Murray, very drunk, and probably a lot of them stoned as well, at 4 a.m, doing jams and everything. I would really like to have a copy of that tape. So we hung out, got friends and everything. But I remember sitting backstage with the singer in RX, what's his name?
Matt
Embry.
Matt, yeah. And just him just seeing the results, just taking him and going like, shit, we got Schwarzenegger as governor and we got Bush as president. Can I move in with you guys? But they I had never heard the band before and it's not really my style, but that show is in my top three and probably the best show I ever seen. That was like everybody who was there, maybe 70-80 people, were mind blown. And a lot of them was musicians, and I know so many people who had so much creative output the weeks after the show. It was like seeing one person playing all the instruments at one time. They were so like probably the band I've seen being most in sync ever. It was an amazing show because there was so much anger and frustration and everything with those guys. From that result,
back to the Loppen. Have the Chains played there?
Yeah,
twice.
The Loppen is actually the reason the Chains exist.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into that.
Yeah, I got when Terry Hall died. They reached. I've done a lot of shows there in the past. They reached out to me and said, "Hey, should we do a tribute show?" They did one for Joe Strummer and one for Joe Ramone back when they died. I was like, sure. And I was like, okay, I'll put on some bands. But I want to show that the specials reach beyond ska. So like, okay, I know Pato, he's been a part of the scene as well, but he's done a lot of stuff, all the hip-hop stuff. Like, okay, it could be cool to have other people that doesn't just, not only ska bands playing, like called him, hey, if you want to do this show, like, sure, but I want to do it with a band. I don't have a band. It's like, okay, I'll think about it, and like, okay, who haven't I played with before that could be cool playing with, and reach out to people I knew from different bands. And it was like 8 or 9 bands playing that night, but we were the only band gathered for that occasion. And we played the show and played special songs, and was a huge blast, sold out Loppen, and then we went apart from that. And then the rest of you guys can take over from that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was so high after that gig, just musically, that it just, I don't know, like I've been away from ska to a certain point, always checking in, but like I had a band called Furillo back in the day, like 99 to 2000, early 2004, and we toured a lot, had a lot of fun, kind of defined my 20s, you know, the way that being in a ska band when you're like 21, 22 will do for you. You know, it's it'll change you. Touring, a lot of guys, a lot of sweat, Jägermeister, no girls. and then some girls and no girls. But it was just such a big kick that just kind of being drawn into that world again and just being with a bunch of people that just really loved this music. Like I've done a lot of commercial work and had some success with that, and a lot of other stuff that without success. But it was just like hip hop shows are weak, bro. They're shit, and they're seriously. I mean, I've been a part of that culture since like '92. And I'm still a huge rap fan, and it defines a lot about me as a person as well. But just the idea of it's you can't beat a good ska show. You can't. I mean, and even within like different live other genres and whatever, you just can't really beat that feeling of just having that. I don't know. It's just amazing. It just it got me so fucking hype after playing we played about a half hour.
Six, seven songs.
Like You're Wondering Now, and like Monkey Man, and like all
Do the Dog.
Yeah, Do the Dog, that killed. That was so sick. And it was just so much fun, and the rehearsals up to it was just so much fun that afterwards I was like, this cannot go away. We need to keep this going. Come on.
And I was sort of feeling the same. So I walked up to you and asked, so this is too much fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's too much
Shouldn't we get together and write a few songs and then ask the other guys if we should do a proper band?
Yeah. So we got together, made a few demos.
We wrote an album, basically.
You wrote mostly an album before we got involved.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But we just kind of... The thing is, like, both me and David, we both got small kids. Like, I got one that's like, he just turned 2. And you're Helen is how old?
1.5 now.
Yeah. 1.5 now. So we're kind of like
you guys are in the trenches right now.
Yeah. We're deep, basically. Bro. Sleep is not an option.
Sleep is hard right now.
Sleep is not an option, bro. Anyway, so we just kind of we had like a very set
defined.
When you only have like so much time to be creative. And you're kind of like, we usually meet up around 9, 10, and then we got to go somewhere around 2, 3. So within that space, we got to, because we like to talk, so we have to just sort out the whole world situation, have a cup of coffee, and also have lunch. And in that space, we also have to write a big tune. So we do that, and that's because we're musicians. Yeah. So we just show up, and we write tunes, and we did that so much that we kind of looked at each other. I think we got an album now.
Yeah, but in general, it was just a fun thing, meeting up on Mondays and writing a few songs and then sending it off to the other guys and ask,
It was kind of weird because, I mean, we hadn't stayed in touch after the show. And then the show was in February, and then in April, end of April, something like that, they wrote in the messenger chat, hey, We kind of wrote an album. You guys want to come and record it? And because Martin is a music producer, it was a fully produced record with all the instruments already done. So it's quite easy to rehearse. So it's like, okay, this sounds like fun. And we tried to get schedules to work, and we actually managed to meet up one night in August and just talk. And then finally, okay, let's just do this. So Martin booked time for the drums played, and he was supposed to do 6 songs, but he's a fucking beast. Yeah. So like did the 6 songs, and then I'll leave one more without rehearsing, and did the whole album in the evening. And then you're like, okay, now we got to record a whole album. And so... Yeah, all of us recorded an album without ever having rehearsed besides the Terry Hall special songs.
Yeah.
Wow. Incredible.
So the first rehearsal was after the album was basically done.
I mean, we're all old. Like, we're old. Like, we ain't got time. The time is, again, time is not an option. You know? So time is for other people. Time is for young people. And they can, they got so much of it, and they use it wastefully. And we don't have that luxury. So we just like we can't meet up. Like just rehearsals are like, it's not, I mean, it's a hassle. We do the doodle, when you doodle and
schedule in the
schedule thing. And it's just like, I mean, we get maybe two rehearsals before a show if we're lucky.
Yeah, we counted it. We played the Saturday, and that was our 10th show, and we have had 25 rehearsals, and there's only one member who's been present at all of them. most of us have only missed one or two, but still, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of rehearsing at home.
Who is this member that has made every single rehearsal?
That's Jacob, man. He like that's our keyboard player. He's like he's a rey de salsa. He's a salsa king. You
but
know, like,
the reason he can make it is because all he's. I mean, we are three generations of ska musicians.
He's the grandfather in the band, so
all his kids are grown and moved out, so he has time.
Okay,
and he just got divorced a few years ago, and all he spends his time on is like just playing, you know, kick ass motherfucking like ska reggae organ. And salsa. Yeah. So he just goes to salsa meets all the time. He's back. He has a physique of a 25-year-old. He looks so good. Like, he's like banging. You know,
probably the one in the best shape in the band, I would say.
Yeah, by far. Yeah. By far.
Who's in the worst shape?
Definitely. I'm definitely. But he's the Don. Like, he's our, he's kind of our lodestar. Like, he was there, you know. He was there in Two Tone era, you know. He's actually like a direct link to that for us, because like he started with Napoleon Solo in
84, and they got released on Buster Blood Vessels label back in the 80s with their first record, and appeared on the London Ska Festival the first time around on that live record as well. So yeah, he's part of our street cred.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow. In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance, like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about the Copenhagen Ska Convention. But like when I think of Denmark, like I don't immediately think of ska, but it does seem like there's a pretty heavy history there as far as ska. Can you clue us in a little bit?
It's ups and downs. Like it's never been big, but there's always been something, and the quality is there.
I would say traditionally in Denmark we've been looking very much towards the UK for music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That means when ska was big in the UK in the 60s, there were also some Danish versions of ska songs from Jamaica and the UK.
Big up, Daimi, Stor Skandale Familien, the first Danish ska tune.
Shame and Scandal in the Family in Danish.
Yeah.
Wait, could you say that again? The very first Danish ska tune, what is it called?
Stor Skandale Familien.
Yeah, by Daimi. Daimi.
Shame and Scandal in the Family in Danish.
Big tune. And the guy that who did the swimming with Steve, like Raske Ping, he was in a sound system called Rootsman Hi-Fi, who are like the main sound. They won like sound clashes and stuff. And he actually went out and got Baby Love and the Fandangos to do the rhythm, and then got her to do like a version on top of it. So he made his own like diss record to play at the sound system clash. So he had the first Danish like reggae recording ever, but now in a version, you know, now in like a dub plate style. And he killed it. That's like, there's a little documentary on YouTube about it where he like shows off and it, the thing, and he's, yeah, it's awesome. It's
and
awesome.
Actually, again, with Bebel and Fandango's, long story, the drummer went to Africa to learn to play drums and winded up finding out they had no toilets in this village he was staying in. Yeah. So when he came back, they recorded a support song for those toilets, and which featured Daimi, another rapper called Pierre Vers, and actually Pato on it. So that whole thing got tied together as well, and got Mikkeller, a very famous Danish beer brand, to make a brown ale. So it's called Boogaloo Down Brown Ale Avenue. And they earned enough to build 3 or 4 toilets.
It's all interconnected up here. Everything is intersectional. Yeah. Like, everybody knows each other because we're so, it's such a small scene. Like, yeah. So everybody that's...
Such
that's,
a small country, such a yeah, small yeah. city. Such yeah. a small
but I mean,
country.
We've always been probably some years behind. So when Third Wave hit, it got big in a Danish context in the beginning of like the end, 99, 2000, 2001, 2002. Yeah. And then around 8, it started slowly to fade. And I mean, Martin's first ska punk band, Forilla, was definitely the spearhead, along with another band called Skalar, which was more like a two-tony-ish punk rock, ska punk band with more political side. Yeah.
Well, also, we have to mention Duck Soup.
Duck Soup was the first.
Two-tone ska band in Denmark, starting out in 81, maybe 80.
Yeah, 80 or something. Yeah, and were released on Burning Heart Record, which Epitaph later bought, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's been something along, but in very much in waves.
On the reggae side of it, there's always been like Bob Marley came through in like 1977 and played his first show at Roskilde Festival. And that just kind of like spread out through the Danish music industry in a really weird way that over in Jutland, which is like this peninsula that kind of sticks up from Germany, we're on an island right now, actually closer to Sweden than mainland Denmark anyway. There's like a place called Aarhus, which is the second largest city in Denmark, and their whole like music environment and their whole scene. A band called Gnex, Genlu Studios, they were heavily influenced by the Marley sound and kind of brought that through there. When they started as this hippie band, but then they kind of turned electric in the 80s and very well produced, but still keeping that, you know, for the floor kind of like Steppa's Marley thing going. So that there's such a lot of like different like periods within Danish music that reggae has played a big part of it. Especially in the 80s and then like the 90s when hip hop came in and dance hall kind of became a thing, there was a big scene for that too. Like there's a few Jamaican crews around that, we're talking three people here, but there's but they still got the set, they, you know, built the speakers and did everything, you know, and to this day there's like a big sound system. Like I know like maybe 3 or 4 crews that you with the big speakers and the mono and put the one record on and it's really fucking loud and you play it to the end, then you take it off and you're like, cha, 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 rasta, and you put it on again, and
like probably some of the very biggest Danish pop hits in the 80s have a reggae feel or a reggae beat.
Definitely.
Tøstein, the Knacks, so forth. So it's been there and then the whole American thing in the 90s came through as well.
I remember I got Sublime on a cassette tape. Out in Amager, my little shit. It was like 96, 97, and it was 40 Ounce to Freedom. And kids were like, everybody was into like, you know, Alice in Chains and just shit like that. And then that kind of thing came, and we're kind of like, these guys sound really fucked up and really badass, but it's really good music. You can like dance to it, and nobody could dance to anything really. You know, it was just like, wow, we can. It was like that or Spin Doctors.
You can dance to Spin Doctors.
Hey, big up them though.
It's more the grunge thing was kind of hard to dance to.
Yeah, but I kind of got into like the whole reggae thing. I just came in through jungle music. Because you would hear like you like you know Baryton Levy stuff, and you hear like boo-boo-da-boo-boo-da-boo-da, but you have this really sweet whoa-yo-yo in the back, and you kind of like figure out why is everything so fast, and you figure out the original records, and that's how I kind of like that, and then Sublime kind of hit, and then I joined Furillo in 99, and then just yeah.
Real quick question, can you name some of these songs in the 80s, these Danish hit songs that were reggae or reggae influenced?
Den Tøstang kom tilbage til
Tøstang. Nej, sig du kan lide mig.
Ja, sig du kan lide mig. Ja.
Og ikke kun med ord. Jeg er blevet skuffet.
Probably the biggest one. It's Tøstangene, which is like
Sissy Boys.
Sissy Boys. With,
yeah. And, slinger ned ad Vestergade yeah. With the Knacks.
Ja, yeah, with Knacks, ja. Yeah. Was one of the, some of the big ones as well. Radio probably did something as well.
Yeah, yeah. It was always with this kind of like, you know, you have like this one drop kind of thing in the verses and you just like bounce up to a full on, you know, full tempo kind of thing in the hooks. That was utilized a lot.
Indiana with the Tøstangene.
Indiana. Native yeah. American. Yeah. You know, wow. It was the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, that song wouldn't fly today.
Yeah, it's Indian. Yeah. It's not We don't sing that anymore.
No. Yeah, but so yes, it's been, but it's been down the last like 10 years or so, like that. But it's starting to
apart from the dancehall.
Yeah, but the whole ska scene has been like Baby Love had kept going. Napoleon got reunited and kept going. Dog Soup have been on and off, but that's been about it. Like in yeah,
and then we got the Chains.
But it's just and then we got the Chains.
Yeah.
So debut record, Crying on the Dance Floor. Right?
Yeah.
It's probably my favorite record that came out last year. Like I really enjoy it.
Oh, thank you, bro.
Yeah.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah. Thank you, I want to kind of, so it sounds like we already kind of talked about it, but as far as songwriting, how is songwriting occurring and like, what does that look like for you guys? Cause like we already talked about like got kids, you're busy. How are you going about writing songs?
Well, Martin, he works as a producer, so his studio is always open.
Right here.
Yeah. And I work at a museum, apart from playing music, and it's closed on Mondays. So I have my Monday off when I send my kids to kindergarten, and we can meet up on Mondays at 10 o'clock.
At 10 o'clock.
Where we start writing songs while drinking coffee and talking about...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The American Addiction, or
yeah, definitely.
What's the American Addiction?
The election she just had.
I don't know if you guys
seems
know
strange
this.
Strange to us.
I don't
guys.
Know if you guys know this over there, but what happens with you guys is really important to us. So we're kind of like just kind of looking over the fence, like what's happening. He starts talking about taking Greenland and shit.
we're like those frogs in the pot where you start boiling the water, and they don't realize how cooked they are. That's us.
Yeah, we're the frogs sitting like right next to the pot, mm-hmm. kind of looking at you guys going, like, what's happening? Jump out, jump.
It always happens to us afterwards. With that, and then we have Kevin, the other guitar player. He brings a couple songs to the table, and then Martin and David and him finish them up.
Kevin, our other singer and just a songwriter and incredible guitar player. He was in a ska punk band called Chakavu. They had a beautiful song called Bayside Boys. Check it out. It's huge.
I don't think it's anywhere.
I know, but try to find it somewhere. It was the big one, one.
He also played in Leo and the Lineup, if you know those guys.
That was insane concept, because like, just like, so have like a boss reggae thing, and you got the organ, but how do you top that? You don't want to put like horns on it, because that would be a bit too much. So what he went out and got like a three-piece girl group vocal backup singers, and they just killed it, like three-part, four-part harmony, and it's just like there, and it's like really heavy like boss reggae. It was so dope.
And they actually they joined us drunk on stage at our record release, because we're like, come on, do it, and finally got them up to do it and sing with us.
Four
they still
really
killed it.
Yeah, just three really drunk girls going like, ooh.
Yeah. And one of them is actually from, I think she's from Austin, right?
Yeah.
Jesse.
But lived here after meeting Nadine, because they, well, the Americans move here when meeting a Dane because we have the free healthcare and everything.
Sure.
It's not so rare they move. The Danes rarely move over there with the American part.
Everybody I know that's been like,
life
oh, yeah.
It's just a bit easier here.
No, it's like, I got a movie career in LA. I got like a thing going on. It's always LA. It's always LA. And like, yeah, we got a movie career. I got a thing going, you know, like, and if things like, oh, I just met this girl. She's really nice. Oh, cool, man. She's a model. Cool. But I think we're going to have kids. So we're moving back home. Yeah. You know, and like, and yep. They'll be showing up here with like some girl. Like, she can't talk the language and shit. It's beautiful.
I don't know if I have the funniest anecdote. One of our very good friends is an American skinhead, and he moved here early in the 90s. After he has done the whole we usually finish our set with Skinhead Symphony that the specials have done, and he does the whole Moonstomp intro. I want all you skinheads to get up on your feet.
We had to get a real skinhead to do it because I can't fucking do it. I mean, no, it's not happening. So like we had to like have a guy who's actually, you know, real full blood, and he comes on like shit is like polished, and you know, like bang, like got the you know, the yeah.
But he did the whole interrail stuff when he was like 19, 20 or something like that. Wound up in Denmark, go to Roskilde Festival, which is one of Europe's biggest festivals. Hook up with a Danish girl, and she's like, "Hey, what are you doing after the festival?" "Oh, nothing really." "Okay, my parents are away on vacation. You want to come visit me in the south of Denmark?" "Yeah, sure, I'll come." And he stayed there for a couple of days, and then they're there, and all of a sudden the car. He hears a car and drive in, and then he's like, "What's that?" "Oh, that's my parents." Like, "Shit, wait, what am I going to do?" He's like, "Nothing, you stay here." And like, and he's like, "Should I meet them?" He's like, "Yeah, sure, whatever," because things are a bit more relaxed here than he's used to. And then they sit and he meet, and like, he's like, he's really awkward with this. And like, and then, "Wait, where do I sleep tonight?" You sleep with me in my bed. "What about your parents?" "They don't care." Like, clash of cultures. And it's like, "Oh, is it like this in Denmark?" And then he never left. In a sense.
There's so many expats up here. Same story. I know so many Irish guys. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
Well, Copenhagen is also a capital city. So we're people from everywhere living here, basically.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But that was a long story away from our songwriting process.
I mean, that's fine. We just hook up and write songs because that's what we do. And like, and we have like, I have the whole equipment and everything set up, and I'm, the way that we work is actually the first album was done with demos with like drum samples taken from like, you know, just, like fat drum loops or like loop masters or you can get like packages, you know, and like just random generic kind of like reggae one drop things, and we would build a demo up around that, and then we get like the real drummer in, and Adam whose studio that we're in, another Adam, he's a total legend. Like this studio right here, this is where we recorded with Farillo back in 2001 with my old ska band. And Adam, who has it, who owns it, he was a sound guy in the old Ungdomshus, which is like a youth house in Copenhagen. That a lot of riots going on, a lot of real center of punk rock, like punk rock
DIY.
Temple, DIY, everything, like, and so many bands came through there during the 80s and 90s. Adam, who owns the studio, he was there, and this studio is actually like started in the old Ungdomshus and now became here. Adam, he used to tour with like Rich Kids on LSD because they came through there and they picked him up. And after that, he's been front of house for like Pennywise, for like
Flogging Molly
for like a decade, like toured the world many times.
Hepcat too.
Hepcat on the first Hepcat tour, he was the front of house. So like Adam, who owns the studio here, he's of course our front of house now, and he tracks the drums also for us. So we get, you know, so we have like I'm a hip hop producer at my heart kind of thing. I work with loops and I know how to do vocals, and I know how to mix everything else. But he's like, when I need like somebody to do like some real proper drum recordings, we get him in to do it. So, I mean, we're pretty hooked up.
It was also a funny thing because maybe tell about your background, David, before starting in this band.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've been playing in bands in the 60s scene for a bit more than 20 years now. And usually I've only recorded on tape. So this is the first time I try recording in a modern way.
Yeah.
David has never released anything that was digitally recorded.
Wow.
Before this.
Usually it's been on like a 4-track or 8-track recorder. Mm-hmm. And
then he met me and I messed up his whole thing.
Played live, doing all of the vocals on one microphone together and stuff like that. Yeah.
We use the tech, like we do all our oohs and ahs, like with him and Kevin. Like
mostly we do the backing vocals on one mic together. Yeah.
So I'm glad David's here, because one of the things that I really noticed about the record is the bass. Like, what's the secret sauce here? Because your record on my stereo, like, sounds way deeper than anything else I have. Like, all the bass grooves rip.
Firstly, I play a Gibson EB0 with a Mudbugger pickup, which is a very bassy as a start. So it gives a lot of bottom to the sound. And then Pato has also been producing it, and he's used to producing hip hop.
It's the first time I ever heard a bass player say the record, there's too much bass on the record.
Yeah, we have to turn it down a little bit.
That was Martin Hip Hop Roots.
They were like, I'm not doing it. No, you have to. It's too much. And so everything on the record is like minus 2 dB bass. So I had to say, I had to kill the bass on everything. Yeah, and I was like, okay, fine.
Yeah, but it's basically also a bass that fits sort of reggae and ska music a lot. An old one too, which makes the sound a bit more
neck,
muddy.
The neck is it's so dented. It's like feeling like a really beat up like 2x4 or something. It's so fucked. It's so messed up. It's so beautiful.
And he's aggressive in his playing as well. It helps as well.
Yeah, I play aggressively, and the bass is made of mahogany, so it's the tone keeps on. The resonance just happens.
Incredible. Yeah, hats off to those bass parts. Like every time I put it on in the car, like when the singles came out, I was listening to it with my son, and like those bass parts, like always would just like my youngest son likes the stereo loud. My oldest son would always be like, "You got to turn it down." And like every time we'd circle back on the song, you know, it comes back in.
I also think that some of it also is down to dubbing it with a fuzz guitar.
Yeah,
like several of the bass lines have been dubbed with a fuzz, which kind of expands it even more.
Yeah,
yeah. Some of them at least. Yeah.
It was just like, it was kind of the idea that with the changed sound. That, because like me and David, we're going from, what was it? It was 64 to 70, mid 71.
Yeah, something like
not
that.
Not 72, mid 71.
Why not 72?
Yeah, what's up with 72?
Too rootsy, man.
You don't want to go there.
Too much Jah Rastafari.
It gets too Jah right there. Okay. You know, and we just kind of keep it back, you know, and then you kind of sneak in 76 to 81.
Okay.
And that's the period. Because the one thing is the two-tone, and we're getting like big up Terry Hall because why we're here. And then you'd have like the other part of it would be like, that's what they stole from. That's where they took things from, you know? And the idea with the fuzz pedal, it was kind of like, it was the idea of somebody going to like Denmark Street in like 67 and buying a fuzz pedal and then going back to Kingston and just like, you know, new sound month. And, you know, let's put this on a record because this will sound cool. Just it'll be something else, you know.
So, like when the wah-wah pedal happened in early reggae.
Yeah.
So we're kind of like a multiverse version of what would have happened if somebody brought a fuzz pedal to Kingston in 78.
And also,
was the idea anyway.
I love that.
At least five of us come from punk rock in some sorts. Yeah. And I know that the ska that David has played had always been very traditional. And with some of the players who was very, like, amazing musicians, very laid back. And you know, you mentioned that you want to do this, but with a punk rock vibe. It's not we're not a punk rock band, but we have a punk rock vibe when we play.
Definitely.
Totally.
Yeah, and then I also come from a garage punk background, so I love fuzz guitars. Yeah. So I needed that in the record.
Well, it was the first time neither both me and Kevin ever used the fuzz pedal. It's this band, which is kind of weird. We be singing
maybe
play guitar.
Up, now they show up with a new fuzz pedal every fucking session, like every rehearsal. It's like, I just got this new one. It's called like the Sasquatch.
And I'm currently building my own. And if it turns out good, we're gonna do chains limited fuzz pedals in the merch stall.
Definitely.
Oh hell yeah.
Yeah,
look,
so I picked up soldering for the first time in many years to build this.
Yeah. I'm so bad at soldering. I can't do it.
Yeah. It takes patience, which is kind of hard when you have ADD like me.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this.
My favorite track on the record is The Kid Is On Fire. That intro comes in.
Charlie. Yeah,
that's fun live as well.
Yeah.
And just the way that the drums are hitting, everything's hitting, and then the groove comes in after that.
That's actually our only song about a real person.
Oh, yeah? Who's it about?
It's a guy called Charlie. Duh. And Charlie was a guy I knew. And he was like this... he was a weird cat, man. He was like into indie rock and heroin. And then he met a girl who was also into heroin. And they kind of somehow had like some musicians hookups. He used to do like this electro clash thing, but then he got really into like Brian Jonestown Massacre, and he actually met somehow over the internet, hooked up with Brian Jonestown Massacre dude, and got him flown to Copenhagen and had the studio set up, and went to the studio with him, and then just did heroin for a month, and then he went home. Charlie, he was actually called Morten with an O, and he's a guy from this place called Sorø, where our drummer is also from. And everybody I know from Sorø is either a junkie or a psycho in some way or form. But anyway,
so which one is Bjorn?
Oh man, I'm still waiting for his freak side to show though.
Definitely not a junkie.
But anyway, no. But anyway, Charlie, he was just a really talented cat, and he actually took like a journalism degree while on a heavy methadone program. You know, like
wow.
he was struggling through that, and like got an internship on the biggest. He was on Ekstrabladet, that is like the big tabloid newspaper here in Denmark, and wrote shitloads of articles for him and anything. And then he had to go get some opioids or something, and he was drunk, and it was really cold, and he was waiting for the guy, because you're always waiting for the guy, and he kind of like snuck down behind some like trash cans and like I just scooting here, and they found him. He was frozen. So that's the song about Charlie, you know. He was feeling, you know, now he's underground. So big up Charlie, man. He was a cool cat.
It's also, in regards to the technique, it's the only song on the record that where the accentuated offbeat is on the upstroke instead of a downstroke. Because, you know, the classic style, scatterized style, is you have the offbeat in a ska song on the downstroke. So, but I just, it didn't fit on this one. So no. This is probably the one that's closest to our ska punk roots.
Definitely.
I mean, yeah, to me, it really sounds... like a proper ska punk song without being punk, like in the traditional sense at all. But I, like you guys said, it has that punk leaning, or that punk flavor to it.
Well, just the whole idea of like if you're not, you just solve so much with just like the big power chord.
Yeah.
You know, and which is not, I mean, fair enough. And I love that shit. I used to have like the amps and everything for it, but with the way we're trying to do it, we can't just do like, cause fuzz sounds shit. If just, you know, you have to do the one note, cause that sounds perfect. Kind of like singing. So it's kind of like doing it. Like how can we push as much energy into it and sound as aggressive as we can, but within our, you know, limited audio universe.
Well, also we went for, instead of getting some horns in the band, we went for organ and a fuzz guitar.
Yeah,
as the horns of the band. So
that's
the
cheap horn section.
Yeah,
I like that.
No, like, because we can't deal with horns, bro. I can't. Not anymore. I mean, they can come visit. You know, they can come for a session.
Yeah,
but you know, in the van, bro, they start smelling the shit.
Too much work.
Looks like we'll feature Steve on the, not next record, but next record again.
Yeah, he can be on your record, but not in the van. No Steve in the van.
You know, Steve is actually one of the cleaner ones.
Yeah.
He's actually one of the cleaner ones, bro.
He's too busy, though.
Yeah. He's very busy. Yes.
I played with a guy at one point. And he had this boil behind his ear, and it just fucking popped while we were touring. And he's driving the van. Like, why do you? No. It was horrible.
I've been in a band like that. One of the themes that seems to keep going through the record are these illusions of someone who's in a relationship with a woman who's hard to be in a relationship with. Is this fictional or is this based in reality?
I just got divorced, bro. I just got divorced.
You just got divorced.
It's a divorce record.
Gotcha.
It's a divorce record.
Half the band is divorced.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And everybody who have had small kids know that you can be in the happiest relationship, but having a baby is just, and trying to be a good partner is just hard.
Parenthood's a trip, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a trip.
It throws a whole thing into the dynamic.
Most definitely.
I mean, it's just, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, just a lot of heartache and, but also like, you know, like a song like Every Hour on the Hour. There's a lot of positive songs too, but
Your Love Is on Fire is also like a love song.
Yeah, big love song. Big love
song. We have love songs too, which is not...
Well, and even the ones where it's like my baby's a hooligan. Where it's like basically saying you're like with this girl that anytime you take her out in public, she gets into a fight. Like it's still like a girl, I love you, but please don't knock that person out.
I can't deal with the fallout right now.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like just inspired by you have like this girl who'll always be like, you know, like you're in a thing and something will happen and something is about to pop off and she'll be really loud. And you're going like, no, tune it down. Cause you're like 1.60 meters, which is like what, 5 foot something. And I'm about 6 something. So who do you think they'll hit first?
Yeah.
Me or you? You know, so like, please be quiet. Cause like, don't start shit. And that's what that song is about, basically. You know, so.
And then we also wanted to write a song for more of the football hooligan, so soccer hooligan scene, and that has always been about men doing violence.
Yeah.
So then we had to do one about a woman in a relationship to one of us. Yeah. That was
it's
the one
basically
fighting,
female basically. Empowerment. It's female empowerment. They can be violent too. You know, so bless their hearts. Bless their hearts.
Like in UK, football is integrated in with ska in Denmark. Always been like that. There's always been bands that have had members or very, very close friends. Even some of our close friends are part of that and part of the rougher hooligan scene, or at least has been. Now, most of them are too old to go into fights, but yeah. So we have a connection in that and like the UK, it's related.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the gang vocals. You guys talk about recording on a single microphone. What's your methodology for like getting a good gang vocal take?
I mean, we don't really do gang. I mean, we actually got one song. Well, we do like Poison. There's a little gang vocals on that. You know, something like that. It's basically just like you put up this and you just like shout a lot. But what we've been focusing a lot of our focus is on, again, because we don't have a horn section. So how do we do like the horny parts. Well, we have like the keyboards can do it, or the fuzz can do it, or we can actually sing it. And yeah, like I do the lead, and David, he has like the perfect like high pitched thing. So like a lot of the things will be like there's a lot of vocals on this track, on this whole album.
Kevin could do it all.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Kevin
by far
is
the best singer in the band.
Kevin is by far the best singer in the band. The guy who's not here, but he has like this huge Otis Redding kind of thing that he could just open up and just like belt, you know. And plus he's like an awesome anything singer. And we found out that basically everybody, even Lasse, he can actually sing a bit. So we're actually in a situation where on stage, everybody has a microphone and everybody does some kinds of oohs and ahs here and there.
It's actually the song you talked about, Kid on Fire. We have three different parts, some parts and some. So Martin is, Lepato is singing the lead. Kevin and David and Jakob, our organ players, sing some harmonies. And then me and the drummer does the last part in the chorus. So
like, oh, yeah.
And it just like just visually having all six members of the band on stage live singing, it just looks great and sounds great. And yeah, it's fun to do.
Yeah. And then what about who does all the ad libs?
What? Which ones? Like the
all the little like, and oh.
That's me.
Yeah.
That's me.
That's Pato.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, falsetto or David and ad libs are Pato and then Kevin fills in whatever is needed.
Yeah.
My favorite one is on My Baby's a Hooligan when you go, yeah, I said it, like right off the top of the track. My kid picked up on that and was like, oh, that's sick. That's a good one.
Yeah, no, I was considering taking it out, but it was just like the off the cuff and it just kind of like sounded. I don't know. There's a like it's kind of like how do you call it? Like tardiness, but it's supposed to be there, you know. There's a lot of there's a lot of demo vocals on this. A lot of the leads are mostly demo vocals.
In general, we ended up with a lot of the demo tracks the actual album. So it's very
it's just
fresh.
That's the vocals that we did on the Monday when we meet up and, you know, had the coffee and stuff. So we actually kept them on there because we could do it again. And like, I think the one that I recorded was like Crying on the Dance Floor. I did a new version of it, but most of them were just like, that's what came out that day. And it, I don't know. You can always do it better, but will it be better? Maybe that first thing, like the first reaction on it is the best. That's your instinct on it. And I've always thought about like, there's the way we think about this band is that there's actually two bands. There's the band on the tape and then there's the band live. The band live plays the band on the tape, but the way the songs are on the tape might not be how it ends up live.
Yeah.
So there'll be like some kind of reinterpretation and you can't have like, I can't have six Davids like in three different voices panned out perfectly. And, you know, we don't have that, but we have maybe three voices and we try to make do, you know, and so it'll be a rougher, more energetic, more vibrant thing. But the record is supposed to be the record. And like, that's even like back to like way of doing it in Jamaica and stuff. That's like, that's what came out that day. That's how it sounds now and forever. And I'll go out and I'll do my little, I put the rhythm on, I'll sing it in another way, you know, a new fresh way or whatever. But that's just how it fucking sounds. And it has to be fresh that day and just have that.
So we sort of try to do it quickly, have a bit of fun in writing the songs. So My Baby's a Hooligan is a good example of that. Just doing some weird, well, lyric thing and just go with it, and then it becomes a song where we can involve Lasse to play the offbeat or
you just get like the demos completely done. You just do this, okay, nice.
So since the album's come out, what's been the trajectory? What's everybody hoping to do with the Chains?
Well, there is a plan.
Conquer the world.
Well, no, I mean, I like on a personal thing, I've been around doing all kinds of weird shit, and I've always had this idea since about 2012 that at some point in my career, I would make like the best reggae band, not the best reggae band in the world, but the best reggae band I could make that I represented the best I would like a reggae band to be. And just make that and just kind of ride off into the sunset, you know, because there will always be need for a reggae band on a festival, no matter what. There will always be vibe. You put that shit on like 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. Perfect.
And then ska is just the most fun reggae music to play, basically.
Exactly.
So
the idea of like, we just want to make, because we sat down, like me and David, we were like talking about like, there's a hole in the market for what we do.
And we love this stuff. So,
I'm talking mostly locally, like around Denmark and Europe, especially. Like, we are so big fans of like Slackers, Acrolytes, you know, and they're friends of ours. We've known these people for 20 years. I've toured with Acrolyte. I was on the Warp Tour in 2008. Just like on the Skull Candy tent, just doing my little rapping thing, you know.
I booked the Acolytes the first show outside of Germany on the second tour, and they came a couple of days earlier, stayed in Copenhagen. I have some fun stories of partying with them,
and
Jesse, I brought them.
And Jesse spilled a beer on me at Rubber Dub, the Rubber Dub club that I was a part of, a big reggae club that was here for 15 years. And that shirt, I signed to a major label right around that time. I was like, yeah, I want the money. I want to do shit like major label, but I'll have the Acolytes t-shirt on my promo poster that's been posted all over town just to keep it, you know, OG, you know? So,
but I mean,
just love these, we just love these groups and we love like, but we just wanted to like put our spin on it, do our kind of little version of it and then take that to another level. And that's what we're trying to do now. And we're actually trying to do it. We're doing it for ourselves, of course, because we're all egoists, but we're doing it for our little scene as well, because damn, Copenhagen needed a new ska band. And we're always bitching about it. There's not enough fucking people coming to the shows, and the shows are not popping, and why are there just, these old bands, just like cool bands, but nothing new is happening. It was like, well, shut the fuck up and do it. So we made a band.
So yeah, we released our first album in September. The next one is going to come out in September.
October. We're stretching it.
And then we do a cover album in March or April, probably.
26.
And then the third of our own records will be out late 26.
Maybe 27.
So it means that the songs, I mean, the next song... record is written, done, so the songs that they're writing on now is actually going to be on record number 4, if you include the cover album.
Wow.
So that's that's a productive trajectory of it.
I love that, working quick. Like you guys said, there's no time to waste, right? Just got to get to it.
We can see the response that's come in, it's mind-blowing. We never thought that we'd be this far already. Like all the top plays on Spotify, Copenhagen is now number 16. There's not a continent. There was like Arctic, maybe was a place where like 5 different continents been played on. Yeah. We got to play the second largest stage, 25,000 capacity at Denmark's biggest heavy metal festival, second biggest heavy metal festival in Sweden in the summer before record came out. We are doing Germany's second largest ska festival later this year. And on Friday, Supernova is going to announce us. So hopefully, if the visa gods are with us, right now it's more like there's so many opportunities. We actually have to like prioritize because we also have kids and jobs. Yeah. If we all were early 20s with no obligations, it would be a lot easier.
But again, it's like I'm a professional musician. I'm a producer. This is what I make my money off. And I'm not saying that I've somehow found that that magic bullet of how to make money off ska music, but it must be possible if you're really good to actually just somehow try to keep doing this. You know?
It's the first band that I ever been paid at.
You know, right? And like, so, I mean, we are off to a really good start and it feels really nice. And I know that we have like, I mean, we have like an album. We have 2.5 albums in the can.
That's excellent.
Like it's there. I need to put some drums on it. I need to put some things on it, but like it's done. The songs are already written for the next 2.5 years of release. And that's not even on some bragging shit. Like I know I got this material.
Well, that's also we have quite a nice setup where, you know, we're not drunk while writing songs or anything like that.
Exactly.
And also we don't
meet up in the morning. We need to be quite quick and
you guys
creative.
Are on California time. This is Miller time over here.
It also helps a lot that the demos arrive at the rest of us done. Like you don't spend a month, like 5-6 rehearsals trying to work out the song. Should this part maybe a little here or there? I mean, we do that with the songs afterwards. Like David talked about live, some of the songs have maybe a different feel or some different breaks. And sometimes you think, damn, if we had rehearsed this before recording, it could have been gone on there. But it makes it like the easiest band I think any of us have ever been in. There's no like, we don't rehearse every week. We played 10 shows so far and we have had 25 rehearsals.
We don't see each other enough to irritate each other.
Yeah.
Which is the perfect way to run a band.
That counts for a lot.
But yeah, hopefully in a few years it will be, well, we'll get a better way of doing more gigs, I suppose, because then our kids will grow up and it will be easier to leave for longer periods of time.
Yeah.
We're actually setting that. We're trying to set up now. Yeah. So we're going to get like 5-6, we can start touring. For real. You know, so that would be perfect.
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying Ska now more than ever. All right. Thanks so much. Hey, if you haven't already, check out The Chains. I really like that record. And Aaron, what do you think about Supernova this year?
Looking like a pretty good lineup. I'm excited. I'm excited for it.
A lot of people were asking me if I was going to Supernova. Mm-hmm. And I said, if I do go to Supernova, it'll be because of The Chains.
Yeah. So go to Supernova, check out The Chains, and then sign up for the In Defense of Ska Patreon and listen to our bonus extended conversation with the members of The Chains.
Hell yeah. Get in on it.
Or do the Patreon thing first, though. Actually, do that first and then go to Supernova. Yeah.
Patreon first, Supernova later. Okay? Ska now more than ever. Bye-bye. Hey, folks. Once a month, our Patreon subscribers get a brand new bonus episode. These bonus episodes are completely different from our usual content. Here's a sample of the conversation we have waiting for you on our Patreon this month.
So over the life of the podcast, who continues to be like any white whales that you haven't gotten a chance to talk to yet, or maybe somebody that turned you down that you really wish they said yes?
I don't really get turned down so much as no replies. I honestly would still love to get anyone from No Doubt to come on the podcast. I've actually really been after Eric Stefani. That's kind of like, that's the member I'd really like, because he was the one that started the band. He was the one that envisioned the band, and he was pretty much the leader of the band up until the point he quit, which was parched way through Tragic Kingdom. And he was the ska guy. You know, he was all about ska. So he's a big one. Eric Andre. Why not Eric Idle? I don't know. Let's have him come on too.
To get access to this episode and all of our exclusive backer content, go sign up for our Patreon today. That's patreon.com/indefensiveska. Ska now, more then
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
Ever.